Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Trap OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to Fish Tank Live, presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group. Seth Levitt here in the Casabella Design Group studios, and I am joined by the only live podcaster to lead the NFL in receptions and bowl a perfect game. He is OJ McDuffie. Juice, we're at it again.
That's facts until somebody proves us wrong, right? I mean, there's some guys out there. There's a lot of guys out there that are doing podcasts.
Find me one.
You threw the live in there just in case they're just doing podcasts.
No, just because we're on a live podcast. I'll say live or recorded or whatever. If you can find, go in the history of all the guys that led the National Football League in receiving, and I doubt any of them. I don't believe it. There's no way any of them also bowled a perfect game.
Besides,
no
way. Theoretically, you know, every podcast is live at the time.
Right. Whatever.
Anyhow, well, yeah, we're arguing the rest of the wrong thing.
Love, though, man. I haven't been out there in a while. Now you're going to get me out there. I'm going to have to break out my bowling balls now. That's what
you don't
do
ever have to. We have it on tape. If you got it on tape, then I guess I said it. Well, so OJ McDuffie in the house. You just heard from the Emmy-adjacent producer, the legendary Savak, in his new digs. Look at that background.
Garage,
is that the Paddock Club?
That's what it looks like, right?
Yeah, man. Really impressive.
That's mine. That's mine right there.
I hate to say it, though, Big Seth, but, you know, I hope that car wins more than the Dolphins do, man.
Man. What if they're starting at the same – never mind. We'll get into all that. And, of course, we just promoted it. We're very excited to have him here. His second appearance on this side of Fish Tank Live. He lives in the chat, but now he's here hanging with us. It's Mike Oliva. I've been screwing it up. Juice, I found out today.
Yeah.
I've been calling my man Mike Oliva all this time. He's never corrected me. I have to imagine I'm one of a bunch of people that – but it's
a lot
Mike
of people
Oliva.
Screwed up.
Keep the extra eye.
Yeah, keep the extra eye.
DolphinsTalk.com and the whole Dolphins Talk ecosystem. That that's something we're going to talk about in a little bit, for sure.
The man right there.
He is the man. Mike, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be here, guys. Happy to talk football with you. Super Bowl week. Wish our team was playing, but okay. That
Listen,
didn't quite
baby
happen.
Steps.
Again, yeah. But it is a Super Bowl week, so it is look. Final game of the year on Sunday. That's going to be fun. It'll be more fun if one team wins than the other, but happy to be here with you guys.
Right. Yeah, Mike, but thinking about that, though, the final game of the season, man, I mean, that's when we get that FOMO, right? I mean, we
– I know.
It's so bad, man. Knowing that, you know, in a few days, there'll be zero football that we're going to really, really enjoy, you know? Yeah. And I'm going to tell you what, football season, you know, post-regular season has been really, really good, you know? And that's been – Hi, Lisa. That's my homegirl right there. She's up there. Hey, she's in Rochester now.
Not far.
So she might be battling you for that coldest weather we were talking about right
now. It's not far from me. It's cold there, too. It's cold. Trust me, it's cold there, too.
Cold belt, right?
Okay, yeah, right there.
I was crying to Mike the other day. It was 37. He goes, yeah, well, at least it's not minus one like it was here. I'm happy it's 10.
Pretty much still the same. Not much difference changed since then.
North Florida, Savak, what'd you guys get down to?
Let's see. Over this past weekend, we got down to 28.
Oh, that's not too bad. You get pretty good. Yeah. All right.
Did you get snow?
No. See, we never time it out perfect enough. We always either get the precipitation or we get the cold weather. We can't ever get both together.
Yeah, well, get your shit together, Jayville. Let's go. Let's get it figured out. But so we're excited.
Cold, might as well make it snow. That's all I said,
right. I'll send you some.
No doubt. Now, as anybody who follows the live on a frequent basis knows, we're missing a couple of our regulars. So Chad Van Horn, the heart and soul of Van Horn Law Group, is pouring his heart into his new beautiful baby girl. Juice, you did a beautiful tribute to Chad in your last I Tried to Tell Y'all. But since then, a baby Van Horn has entered the universe. So shout out to Chad.
Yeah. Baby Kiara.
Kiara Van Horn.
Van Horn, man. She's beautiful. She came in over 8 pounds, 21 and a half inches long.
Let's go.
Yeah, she's ready to walk already, man.
You know
what I mean? She came in. She was ready. And Miss Gabby, your mom, you wouldn't even know she had an 8 pound baby brewing, man, because she was so still petite, worked out up to the Saturday before she had the baby on the Sunday. And so blessings to our Van Horn family, man. And yeah, I can't wait to meet my niece. Of course, you know, Paula Bishop Photography is going to be doing her baby pictures. So,
shout out. Yeah.
So we've already got that planned out. We just got to wait for Gab to be ready and then we'll be ready for little baby Kiara.
Very nice. Very awesome. Nice. And Chris Perkins is, well, we can make a Wi-Fi joke here, but
fighting with his townhouse club, whatever. Fighting with the board.
Yeah,
apartment complex board.
Yeah, the Starbucks is under renovation, and so is the Wi-Fi. I don't know what the situation is with Perk. Actually, in fairness, we were giving Perk a couple weeks away from us just to see if we can get things figured out. I think he was he might have just dropped a column on something that we're going to talk about today, because today was the Meet the Coordinators in Miami Gardens. And I know he had to write a story about that. So with that, let's jump into that. Did everybody get a chance to listen to the coordinators today? They were all available to the media.
And I saw most of it. I didn't see all of it. Yeah.
Bits and pieces. You guys seem really interested and excited. Everybody's fired up to learn who the new coordinators are.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you, man, I did listen to the coordinators, and I like that. It seems like everybody's in unison with this group right here. And one thing that I did get from all that too, Big Seth, is that they all know each other, which is always like, you know, that familiarity is always a good thing too, in my opinion. Of course, there's going to be some other people that are working below these coordinators that are probably new people.
Yep. You know,
but at the same time, though, I think that the guys that they've assembled so far, they know each other very well. They obviously know how to work well with each other, which is always going to be important because, you know, the fact that they decided to do it again, to bring it back.
So right.
They've got a lot of good things, a lot of synergy with each other. And I think that, you know, when you look at it, the dynamic is pretty good, you know. You know, when you look at, you know, our special teams coach, you know, and Tabor, you know, he's an older gentleman. Then you look at DC and Duggan, he's a younger gentleman. And then I think it's like Slowick's kind of in the middle, you know what I mean? So they've got a really nice dynamic when it comes to coaches. And I think that's important for, you know, relationships with the players.
So, and I agree with everything you just said, Juice, except for, you know, so when you said that Tabor is an older gentleman, right? So I'm listening to him and I'm looking at him. And I'm thinking like he's pushing 70, right? And then I look at it, he's only 2 years older than me. Well, so I don't know.
Stress.
We're older gentlemen, Big Seth.
Got that NFL stress on his face.
Oh my God. Yeah,
we are older gentlemen, man. When are you going to recognize
that? That was the reality. That's what hit me,
bro.
That's what hit me. And he does seem like a gentleman.
Look at your chin, bro. Look at my chin.
Golly, man. I was like, is that, you know, I think that the person I try to see in the mirror is not necessarily the person that is that everybody else is seeing. Right. Little Big Opinions Podcast. What a great name. What up, Little Big Opinions Podcast? Who is – is this someone that we know?
They reached out to me today. They want to have me on. I think they're newer.
Nice.
I said I'd come on, and I don't know when I'm going to come on with them. But, yes, I think they're a newer podcast out there.
Man.
Or well, if they're not new, I'm sorry. I just got on my radar today. That's all I'm going to say.
Give us some history, Little Big. Drop it in the chat. Let's tell us where we can find you. What's that, Smock?
I was just saying they're new to you.
Yeah,
right,
new to me.
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, so there was a lot to unpack there. I want to start with something that you mentioned, Juice, and that was, you know, hey, they all seem to know each other. Is that – I heard some different thoughts from different people that – there were people that kind of had the, oh, they're just hiring, you know, Sully just hired his best friend from Green Bay. And then in Green Bay is just hiring, it's Green Bay South now. And Halfley's just hiring everybody from Green Bay. And so I'm curious if with each of you, I'd love to get each of your opinion and certainly in the chat, are we bothered by the fact that guys are hiring guys that they know? Do we feel that diminishes the resume of the people that they're hiring? Or is that like, is that kind of what you would expect? Like we get excited that when Mike McDaniel was hired, well, Kyle Shanahan brought him everywhere he went. He must be, you know, he must really like the guy. He must be good. And so how come it's okay in that situation, but maybe we're bothered by it in this situation?
Go ahead, Mike.
It doesn't bother me the least. In fact, they can't hire enough people from Green Bay. Green Bay's had more success the past 4 or 5 years. Like, why wouldn't we want to replicate that here? I saw a stat that was on social media, like, in the past week or so. Going back to 2022, when you just look at the draft, who's had more guys picked that have actually played games, who are on the roster, we ranked last. They ranked first. So, yes, let me steal as much as we can from the team that ranked first when it comes to the draft. And obviously, guys who are on the field playing and contributing. I can't have enough of the Packers on this staff, honestly. Anyone who's complaining about this, look, everyone hires their friends. John Harbaugh with the Giants, he's bringing in a ton of guys from the Ravens. That's how this league works.
Right. Yep.
So, I'm not upset by it. And, in fact, I want more. Give me more Packers. Because whatever they've done, they've been relevant for 30 years. And I know some of it is, yes, they've hit on the quarterbacks, but okay, let us start hitting on the quarterbacks now. Now it's our turn. So I don't have a problem with it, and I think it's great.
Yeah, and Mike, you know they have the right philosophy when it comes to quarterbacks too. You know, the different philosophies that Seth's always talked about. Seth talks about this all the time, about going after a quarterback, drafting a quarterback every single draft.
Yeah.
Or every other draft, like Sully said. And I think that's always important. And they've gotten lucky and they've hit. And they've also, what they've done very well is having that quarterback in place before it's too late. You know, and that's critical. You know, don't wait to need a quarterback to go get a quarterback. And I love that about it too. And like you said, when it comes to these guys from Green Bay, they've done it. They've done everything so well. And I don't mind guys having their, you know, the guys that they've worked with for years. You know, I was talking about Duggan being the young guy. He's 33 years old, but hell, he's been around half for 8 years now. You know, so half has to know exactly what this young man is about. Plus, it's still going to be half's defense run by a younger guy at times, but you know, it's still going to be half. You know, so I mean, I think that the way they're building this thing is the right way. And what I love, you know, people talking about Sloan, he was here before. What I love about him is he's going to have so much inside intel about the players that are already on the roster that it'll help Half out so much when it comes to, you know, guys. Now, and here's the thing we're going to know too, because we'll see the guys that are let go or not being brought back, how some guys in the locker room, especially maybe Sloan, felt about that guy but couldn't do anything about it, Big Seth. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
You know, he's going to know the guys that probably, you know, he probably want to let go, but not having that power, he couldn't. But now he has a little bit more power being OC that he might have an opportunity to trim off some of the fat of guys that he knows didn't work hard, or, you know, that aren't as talented, or that didn't fit his, the systems or whatever. So I think the fact that you keep that, you know, that similarity, you keep that that common denominator when it comes to the OC with some of the players on that side of the ball, man, I think that's big for us, man. So just hearing those guys talk today, man, I was like, really was obviously impressed. You don't win press conferences. I get that part. But I like the way the direction that this team is headed. That's for sure.
One more thing real quick, too, about these guys off from the Packers. Their last two quarterbacks that they hit on, Rodgers was picked in the 20s. Love was picked in the 20s. I see a lot of fans on Light Dolphins. They have to tank. They got to lose. No. You can rebuild and not tank, because these guys, if you have smart people, you can find quarterbacks anywhere. You don't have to lose
was a
train, on purpose.
Right?
Yeah, trade up, trade down.
Right.
If people are smart who know what they're doing, they will find the quarterback. And that's what they've done in Green Bay for decades,
right,
on top of also taking more quarterbacks when you already got one, which is a smart way to go.
Hey, Mike, yeah, what number pick was Dan Marino?
27 or 29, I think it was.
So, exactly. Your point exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Just find the right guy. For yeah, sure.
That's it. That's exactly it. So, and you know, I you said this is the way this league works, Mike, and it is, but it's kind of the way the world works, you know,
yeah,
and not necessarily this whole, I mean, yes, the Good Old Boy Network is a separate conversation,
yeah,
particularly when you look at 10 jobs and not a single black coach was hired. And, you know, that's a separate conversation. But in just in general, if any one of us started a new business or was given a new position and you had to build the folks that worked for you in any business, you're going to hire the people,
yeah,
that you know that could get the job done. You're going to interview some, and you'll probably fill in some of the blanks with new folks that come in with great resumes or come in with great what? References from other people who you know. Like, that's just the way it works. I tell young people when I speak to them all the time that I don't care what it says on your resume. If I see a reference that's someone that I know and respect, then I'm going to call that person. And if I call that person, so look, our guy Andrew Crowell just jumped in, right? So if I see someone that I'm trying to hire and they've got a great resume and whatever it might be, or I got a guy from Harvard and then I got another guy from UCF, but he's got Andrew as a reference, I'm going to call Andrew and say, hey, tell me about this guy. And if he raves about him, I'm going to trust the guy that I know. And I think that's what happens here. You can't tell me that John Eric Sullivan gets the job of a lifetime. He spent 30 years, 20-something years in football, hoping to one day be a general manager. This is the peak. There's no job beyond general manager if you are – like, he's not trying to become a head coach. He is exactly where he wants to be as a general manager. Do you think his first and most important hire, he's just going to hire his friend who might be a slapdick? Like,
no chance.
No chance.
No, it's not. And plus, I also heard from some people, which I never really thought about, but it makes a lot of sense. With a head coach, at least, you want a guy that has been at a lot of places. Why? Networking. He knows a lot of staffs. You know why Chris Shula maybe was hurt a little bit is he's only worked for the Chargers for a very short amount of time and then the Rams. So for him to put together a staff, he doesn't have the network where someone even like Halfley, who was with Cleveland, Tampa Bay, San Francisco, Ohio State. Then he was with a head coach for 4 years. And then he comes to the Packers. He has a lot of people he has worked with. He can reach out to and put together a staff where some of these younger coaches who've only worked at one or two places can't. And that might have hurt someone like Chris Shula. And that made a lot of sense. I never thought of it that way before until I heard someone recently talk about it and go, oh, okay, so you want a guy who's moved around a little bit, learned from a few different people, and actually knows a lot of people so he can put together a staff relatively easily.
Yeah, and that makes so much sense because we've seen some of our coaches recently that we've had over the years, you know, that we've seen like they've had trouble putting the staff together. You know, it seemed like it's taken way longer than what it's taken Halfley to do compared to some of these other guys. It seemed like it's, you know, taking guys a long time. And you wonder why that is. It seemed like all these guys that he's picked were chomping at the bit to be, you know, part of this organization. And Coach Sloig, you know, happy to be back with the organization. So I think that's a great point, Mike, because you know, knowing guys is important, but the fact that you've rubbed elbows, you hung out, you know families and things like that, you know the kind of guys you want on your staff, and you have to be around a little while. Even though it wasn't as a head coach in the NFL level, he was a head coach, obviously, at Boston College, but at the NFL level, he was not. But you still have been around so many people and so many – I mean, coaches, man. I mean, look at all the stops that most of these guys have had, man. When you have a lot of stops, you obviously meet a ton of people, and I'm sure there's other times where they get to hobnob together and stuff. So, yeah, great point right there, man, about the fact that you're able to build a staff. And I think the fact that he was able to get him so quickly, he knows him very well, it could lead to some earlier.
He already lost the guy, too, after a week. He already lost Nate Hackett after a week. Someone already poached him.
How crazy is that?
7 days.
Wow. How crazy is that? Yeah, that's wild the way that works. I'm looking at a question from Lisa. She said, was it a foregone conclusion that we were moving on from Weaver, even if he didn't get another job? So, there's no insider information here coming from me, at least. Obviously, Weaver got really close on a couple of different opportunities, or at least that's what it seems like from the outside looking in when he got a couple second interviews. But what you have to keep in mind is he was a defensive coordinator. You hire a head coach who is a defensive coordinator who's saying from the moment he walks in, I'm going to call the defense. Right. So that's basically, for Weaver, he would be taking a demotion, essentially. You know, he went from where Mike McDaniel considered the defensive coordinator the head coach of the defense. He would be the guy that's, I don't want to say glorified QC, because that's not fair. And I liked what Halfley said today, that he has so much faith in Sean Duggan that he's going to allow him to be the head coach first and then call the defense. I thought, I really liked the way that sounded and was positioned. But for Weaver to be the guy in control of that room, to have to kind of take a step back, I don't know how that would have worked.
Right, right. You know, and it's hard for anybody. Any assistant coaches have the toughest job once the head man gets fired. You know, it really is. It's a fact. And so those guys are all, you know, I mean, hell, I'm sure they were making calls when things weren't looking good for the team. You know, you got to start.
Yeah, by week like seven.
Putting those out there, yeah. You have to start putting those out there early, you know, just in case. And, you know, best thing that could have happened for Weave was to get a head coaching job. Obviously, we just talked about that. That didn't happen. But, you know, you get a lateral move, you know, going to be a defense coordinator again. I thought he did an admirable job, especially when all those corners came in August. the injuries that happened on defense. Everybody has injuries, but he still – he did a solid enough job that, you know, if he had a healthy team, it might have been a little bit different outcome for those guys. But at the same time, you know, who do we keep? I think Embry's still on staff, right?
He's not coming back. He's not coming back. He's I think I saw back. That.
So we don't have anybody then, really. We don't have anybody.
No, so we kept Clark. We kept Slowick and Joe Barry, the run game coordinator on defense and linebackers coach. Okay. Those were the three we kept, I think.
Well, I like that. So we got some familiarity, which is nice. I mean, evaluating the talent, these guys have seen it all, you know. And so we'll see how many guys are around, you know, when they start getting rid of guys. I like the fact that got fresh eyes on these guys. And when I got Seth, when I came, not when I came, but when we lost Coach Shula to a firing, and Jimmy Johnson came in. It was like you got to show and prove all over again.
Yeah.
You know, only one that was untouchable was Dan Marino. Everybody else, you know, had to go out there and win a position, bro.
Yeah.
And I like that too. That was part of the whole thing today too, is that they're talking about, you know, and slowly talk every position. They, you know, of course they talked about too. Every position there's going to be a competition.
Yeah.
Every single position.
He talked about how it made people uncomfortable and that was a good thing.
Right.
And that is such the opposite, right? I think we heard rumors about how they didn't want people to be uncomfortable. We heard that probably hurt the Dolphins in the past.
Right.
There was speculation that they didn't bring in experienced quarterbacks so that they didn't make Tua uncomfortable.
Or Tannehill. That goes back to Tannehill, too. They never brought anyone behind him to push him.
Definitely that's not Tannehill. You know, we talk about how coddled Tua was.
Yeah, this is a long-standing problem.
I think right up there with him, man. I mean, he really was. It got to the point where they were telling DBs in practice not to pick him off. You know what I mean? Like, come on,
can you
man.
Believe that? Can you believe that? Don Shula's rolling over in his grave if you heard that.
Yeah, yeah. They were worried. Yeah. You know, and Tanny, hey, Tanny still, he parlayed that into a lot of money, so I ain't mad at him, but, you know, that's the way it
was. Yes, he did. I talk about a guy who got a few $100 million contracts. Yeah. Bruce Andrews asking, how much does it help players to have continuity with assistant coaches?
It's important. You see them more than anybody. You spend more time with the assistant coaches than anybody, you know, and I think that, you know, I had Larry Seipel, who was an incredible coach, but he was a punter that, you know, was my wide receiver coach. But then I had Robert Ford, and Robert Ford really taught me more about being a receiver than anybody, but he was like a dad to all of us, man. He really, you know, he really took us under his wing in terms of all the other stuff as well. So that guy right there is the guy you want to go out there and you want to play for. Want to play hard for Sipe too. But I came in as a young dude. Sipe already dealt with Duper and Clayton and Ingram and Fryer and all those other guys. But as a young guy, man, I was the young guy, you know. But then when I got to Coach Ford, I was the old guy, and that, you know, that relationship was really good. But it's really important. And I think that's an important thing to talk about too, because, you know, Tabor's talking about that he's one of the most liked coaches in football, you know, special teams. And he's a guy that's going to deal with everybody on the team, offense, defense. You know, of course, that all comes into special teams. So, you know, I think that these guys they're going to be smart about is that fact that, you know, they're going to be players, coaches, but they're not trying to go to barbecues with the guys.
Yes.
You know what I mean, Mike? They know that line not to cross, man, because you still got to be somebody like, you know, I always use that kindergarten teacher thing all the time. Like, you know, kindergarten teacher, you know, she's got to be mean at first if she wants to be nice at the end. But you can't be nice at first and then be tough at the end and then wonder why the kids aren't listening to you at the end, you know. And
we just had that with Mike. That was Mike's whole problem.
Right.
In that he was too friendly with the guys. And right. I get it. It doesn't need to be the days of the 1970s or 80s where it's MF for this, MF for that the whole time. Okay, but you can't be so friendly where you're one of the guys.
Right.
You're not one of the guys. You're the head coach.
Yep. Agreed.
There's got to be pressure out there as players. You know, and we talk about this a lot. There's got to be pressure from coaches to get guys out there to work. You know what I mean? And I don't think these guys wanted to work. He didn't make them go out there and work, you know? And I'm gonna tell you this too, you know, people always say there's no difference, but there's a difference between being hurt and being injured, you know? I don't want you out there injured, but if you're hurt, a lot of guys play hurt. These guys didn't even play hurt. They didn't play hurt, and it was acceptable. And now then it became unacceptable because I think they used Mike that way. And, you know, they took advantage of the situation. I don't think that's happening with half. I don't think that's happening.
No, well, I mean, look at what happened with Vic Fangio. Vic was here, and not all the players on defense, but a lot of the players on defense clearly didn't like him, because the day he was gone, they're putting up stuff on social media trolling him, which is totally unprofessional, honestly. But it's like Vic probably old school guy, and you got Mike there sitting there with his guys on offense having a party, and all the guys on defense are looking like, what? Why not? How come not us?
Yep.
He's over there telling jokes. You're having a party. You're over here making us work. But Vic's way works, clearly.
It was all one position group, though, Mike. That was all one position group.
Secondary, yeah.
Yeah, them DBs. Them DBs. We played with some tough DBs that wasn't, Mel Phillips wasn't going for that, Big Sal. Mel Phillips wasn't going for that.
Those guys,
David Fernandez, you're right. That, you know, go enjoy, what'd he say? Go enjoy your practice squad check. That's Tannehill talking to, you know, when he got a little upset with the practice squad guys doing him, you know, killing him over there. You know?
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's literally the worst thing you can say, isn't it? If you're making,
don't talk about anybody's money, Big Seth.
Especially not when you're the highest paid guy and you're not performing well. You just can't do that.
Yeah, I got a teammate I will not name or mention that was bitching about my signing bonus. And I just got in there, and he was looking for a new contract. And I still don't like this dude because of that, because I know the rules, man. You know what I mean? I'm cool.
Get your hands out of my pocket.
Get your hands out of my pocket, man. That's cardinal rule right there, man. Don't take anything out of the locker room gossip-wise, and don't talk about anybody's money, man.
Right, right. So getting back to this, Bobby Slowick. Some interesting, you know, Bobby Slowick, first of all, did a great job of saying absolutely nothing for 20 minutes in a lot of ways. He wasn't going to talk about players. He wasn't going to talk about other coaches. and was smart, right? Because he knew what we didn't at that moment, that Hackett had just been poached, as you said, Mike. But there were two things that he was asked that I thought was very interesting. One was, how similar will your offense be to Mike McDaniel's? And he kind of laughed about, wow, right out the gate. But, of course, Barry Jackson is going to ask you the question that needs to be asked and answered. And he talked about how they all kind of come from that same tree, and so that there are going to be some similarities. And he didn't deny that. But, I would like to think that, number one, the fact that all he has to do is focus on the offense and not the entire ball club. And maybe Mike McDaniel, I always wondered on game days, did he only focus on the offense and not the entire ball club? And was that part of the problem? I don't know. But my hope is that that helps. And I also think, Bobby Slowik in 2023 was a guy that was supposed to be like one of the next head coaches in the National Football League. And CJ Stroud, we all were like, God, I wish we had that guy here. And, Bryce Young, how could they pass up on him for CJ Stroud? And then the next year, CJ Stroud takes a step back. The offense slows down. They start to think that the offense is getting away of this championship caliber defense, and Slowik's out of a job. Right. And then the next year, with Slowik's not there, Stroud takes another step back. And so it makes you wonder, was it Stroud declining? Is he regressing in just 3 years? Was that first year a fluke? Did Bobby Slowik get a raw deal? So I'm really curious to see what this offense looks like. And I was talking to somebody today. I think what I'm most curious about, And one of the things he talked about today, which everybody says, but, breaking the huddle, getting to the line of scrimmage quickly, yep, all of those things. I want to see what the operation looks like. Yes, I want to see the touchdowns. Yes, I want to see the run game. Yes, I don't want to see us, throwing the ball on third and 6 inches. But I want to see in week 11, the guys know where to line up. That's what I really want to see. And that's what I think is going to be, and that I think will be a reflection not just upon on Slowik, but also on Halfley. Like, what standard are guys going to be held to? Sam's not impressed. Sorry, Shady.
I thought that was a great point. And what? We saw that in the last three games. We actually did see those guys get up to the line of scrimmage, really fast. And that was under Quinn Ewers when he was a quarterback. They finally got guys up there on the ball with all the motion and shifts. Now, who knows how many motion and shifts there will be, but there will be some. Obviously, you have to motion and shift, but you don't have to do it 12 times. You don't have to shift. I think there was a comment about, I don't know if it was it Slowik that said it was, oh, no, I think it was, it had to be Slowik that said it, when there were like three different shifts, when they were watching some film. Three different shifts and emotion and all that. I mean, you didn't. The first shift didn't do it. Second shift didn't do it. The third shift probably is not going to do it. And you want emotion. They're staying where they're at. They're probably going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So why are we now down to 3 seconds on the play clock? And now we're messing around. So yeah, I'm with you, bro. I mean, I think that there's got to be some parts of the old offense, because they are from the same tree. And I think there's also going to be a situation where they've talked about it and they better stick to it, where they're going to try to pound the rock as much as they can, because that's the way the game is going these days.
Yeah.
I think a big thing too, the offense, Mike McDaniel's offense works. The problem at times was Mike McDaniel. We'd be running the ball 6-7 yards a clip. He'd stop running it. Third one, third and two. Instead of just running it, we throw a sideways pass. We get down to the red zone. We throw a fade pass to a 5'9" wide receiver. We did crazy stuff with Mike. If Slowik's going to run it, not the same offense exactly, but close enough, but just not do the dumb things at times McDaniel did, I'm going to be A-okay with that. We wasted a timeout in one game this year in the first quarter when the clock read 15. Not 1 second ran off. He couldn't get his offense on the field for the first play of the game. I mean, think about that. First play of the game. He couldn't get the offense on the field and ready. Offense. Like, stuff like that is inexcusable. So if that stuff's cleaned up, the operations, like you said, and just, when the running game's working, stick with it. Make them prove they can stop it. And then if they stop it, then change from it. If not, just keep running it. That was the problem with Mike. It wasn't that it was his offense was bad. It was that he got in the way of it sometimes. Yeah. It's like, dude, you're holding the team back, not the actual offense itself. Simplify things. It's not simplify. It's football at the end of the day. It ain't that complicated.
Yeah, yeah. You can't. You know, here's how you can make things simple, Mike, Seth, Savak, is be able to run it when they know you're going to run it. Keep yourself in manageable down and distances. You know, and then you know, then you've got to keep them a little bit off balance. So if you can run the football, if the teams that run the football well, man, they're
running game travels, Juice. You know that running game travels.
Yeah. They're the dominant squads in this game now, man. It's like, you know, look, as a wide receiver, hell, one game at Penn State, we threw the ball 10 times because we were running it so well. I became one of the best blockers in college at that point. You know, I mean, we're just going to block everybody, you know? And I think that, you know, you take pride in that. And we'll talk a little bit about it, man, but our last playoff win was so long ago. But I see me blocking all the way, you know, getting Lamar into the end zone blocking. That was pride right there.
Man. Right.
You know, I love that. You got guys right now that talk about what you can't do anymore. We used to run this toss crack. I'm cracking defensive ends, outside linebackers, strong safeties. You know what I mean? But the run game, if it's like that, then guys, we don't mind doing that. I mean, I know some wide receivers just want to pass, throw the ball to me. And don't think I didn't say that on occasion. You know, don't think that I was unselfish like that, Mike, you know. But at the same time, though, a good block and seeing a running back run off your tail, man, you know, that means a lot, too, as a receiver, if you're really out there trying to be the complete guy and doing your job.
And we got the running backs. It's the one area of the team we have depth. We got the backs. It's just give them the ball. Upgrade the offensive line a little bit. I mean, it's not all bad on the offensive line. Some people are way too hard on it. It's not all bad. But, yes, some parts need to be tweaked. And then just run the ball.
Yeah.
Run the ball.
Yeah, well, you look at that O-line. I mean, that's a great point, man. They have to make some changes there.
Right side needs to be addressed. The right side.
1,000% has to be addressed. And I think that Zaviah Nye is going to have a much better year. Patrick Paul had a great year for a second-year guy. Aaron Brewer, I mean, hell, he might could have been offensive MVP if it wasn't if it wasn't for Achan, you know what I mean? And then the right side, you know, Austin Jackson, we'll see. That right guard position was a mess. Austin Jackson missing half the season.
Austin Jackson never plays. That's a problem. I mean, let's just be honest. He never plays.
That's exactly the problem.
That's exactly the problem. When he plays, though, he's pretty good. You know, we never thought
we'd five times
him.
A year.
And then we miss him. And then we don't have him. Then we miss him again. Yeah. We can't figure it out with him.
Yeah. Never mind. I'm not going to go there because I'm going to create a problem.
They might figure it out for him real easy.
Right. I was going to go somewhere that I shouldn't go. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting, but he was also asked about Tua. So Slowik was asked about Tua. He talked about how difficult of a season it was. And he didn't rule anything out. He didn't commit to anything. But it makes me wonder, you know, they obviously have some tough decisions to make and some significant cap challenges that they're faced with. Starting just because of that crazy Tua contract. And it makes me wonder if they're going to try and get some value out of him. And at least, if they're going to let people compete and say, hey, here's a guy that led the league in passing at one point. Is there anything left? Is it worth giving him a shot? Or are they just going to cut bait? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
I do think
they're handling it respectfully.
They are handling it respectfully, but it's over. You got two head coaches fired. They ain't gonna let this head coach ain't gonna get him fired.
And a GM.
Let's just call it what it is. You got two head coaches fired. Yeah, he ain't gonna get the third one fired.
Coming from the top row.
I mean, it's the truth. And plus, I don't know how it works exactly with the contract, but what I've heard and how I understand it, there's stuff in the contract where if he's on the team next year, say he's the third string or second string, he gets hurt, that triggers more guaranteed money on it. That's gonna make it harder to get rid of him then. I think you just gotta rip the Band-Aid off. Whether you do it post June 1st, where you take the money and split, or you do it all in 1 year, next year's probably going to be a rough year. Anyways, I think all fans of the Dolphins, at least level-headed fans, kind of understand next year might be rough. But at some point, you got to rip the Band-Aid off. I mean, again, we talk about Stroud, how he's gotten worse a little bit every year. Well, our guy, he was doing that first a little bit. He got worse a little bit every year. And he can't keep pointing the fingers at the coaches, at this. Then he goes at the press conferences. He's blaming fans. He's blaming this one, talking about his teammates. It's just, he got to go. You can't have him on the sideline next year, moping around, being all miserable and pouty when things don't go his way. He's a nice man. It didn't, and he got paid. So it ain't about money. He's going to be okay. But he got to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I, you know.
Well, tell us how you really think.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I tried to tell y'all.
Yeah, I tried to tell y'all. You know, we've given, you know, we've given quarterbacks probably longer, you know, time than we should have. I mean, and especially when, you know, when you think about, like, we talked about Tannehill a little bit. You know, he needed to be in the right place. You know, he needed Derrick Henry behind him. He needed that a team that had great defense going to pound the rock, and then he can make a play every once in a while. You know, for us, I think you said it earlier, Mike. You know, I think that McDaniel really wanted to ride Tua so much and prove that he was going to be the guy to make Tua the guy. And then with Tua's health and obviously and his agility, which he didn't have a lot of in the first place, and then obviously his, you know, his ability all diminished, then it was like, you know, we held on to him a little longer than we should have, you know. So I think you're right, man. I think that – and the game has changed, man. Look at the game. I mean, look at the game now. You know, you've got one quarterback in Sam Darnold who's not very athletic, but he still can get out of there and move, and roll and, you know, and get up out of there. And you got, you know, you got Drake May, who's a hell of an athlete. You have Bo Nix, who was a hell of an athlete. You got all these other – that's the way the game is. When trouble hits – we need quarterbacks in this day and age that can create. We don't have that creator anymore, you know, in Tua. And we really, really never did have it, you know. If Tua didn't throw it on time, we were in trouble. And that's unfortunate for him because when he was on like that, it was amazing. But now the way the game is, you know, when they condensed everything and they talked a lot about, and Slowick talked a lot about how that too high shell killed us, you know, everybody's condensed because we're throwing it so quick. We can't keep throwing the ball quick and expect big results and big chunk plays like we did before. Now the game has got – we got to figure out a way to stretch these defenses out, you know. And I know that, you know, that what on day one, what Half was talking about was that the hardest part for them was when play action or you got a run game and they're trying to throw behind linebackers in the front of safeties. Now, we didn't have that problem because those safeties weren't going anywhere. The windows were so tight. Because they weren't worried about us getting over the top with the fastest receivers, the fastest tandem receivers in the game. They weren't worried about it because we weren't doing it. We have to get back to being able to run the rock and push those safeties back and be able to throw behind them, you know, behind the linebackers and underneath the safeties.
I mean, there's no arguments here in the chat, or from Michael.
You got to have a quarterback that has the ability to do that.
Well, so that's the big question, right? What are they going to do with that position? Which is, you know, again, that's the point that I was trying to make, and it's why he was asked the question. So I think it was interesting the things that he said about Tua. I don't know that it gives us any kind of answers either way, but
it was very nice and professional, and that's right. What they should say.
It was.
And by the end of this month, I'd be shocked if he's still on the team because free agency starts like March 9th. It's like it'll be here before you know it. And he ain't going to be on this roster that first day of the new league year when they got to set up their salary cap. So this is going to be his last month in Miami, unless they do it March 1st, 2nd, 3rd. But you get my point. He ain't going to be here much longer. He's going to be off the books. Well, not off the books, but off the roster, still on the books.
Oh, wow.
However they do it.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Should be interesting.
He'll be okay though, right? I mean, he's
gonna have steak dinner every night if he wants. He's gonna be okay.
Yeah, we won't be feeling sorry for him.
There's a lot of steak dinners, and not just from Longhorn. I mean, it's although you know I like a good Flo's filet, that's for sure. So something else that was interesting: Troy Aikman, the Miami Dolphins Troy Aikman, not the Cowboys Troy Aikman, but the Miami Dolphins Troy Aikman was on the Rich Eisen show this week. And kind of pulled the curtain back a little bit and talked about he's such a serious guy, but a smart guy, an interesting guy. But he talked about, you know, what had been of interest to him. He talked about, you know, maybe the consideration of getting into a front office position. And then he talked about how fond he was of Jeff Hafley even before he was brought in to be a part of this process, just having an opportunity to talk to coordinators when he was doing production meetings. So what did you guys, hear any of the stuff?
I saw the whole thing. Yeah.
What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, He knows Troy. That's the one thing. In that job he's in, you travel 17 weeks a year, and you're meeting with all these teams and all the people in the front offices. So he has a wealth of connections, which is why Miami reached out to him. Because who else in their front office has that type of connections? Tom, he came from the Padres. Shore, he's just a numbers guy, really. Marino, I don't know if he knows people at the level Troy knows, like that level, where you're in a new team's facility every week. So they needed someone like that just to be like, hey, talk to this guy. Hey, think about him, and just sort of float some ideas out there. And I thought, you know, it's great. I think Troy knows what he's talking about. I think Troy probably gave his opinions, and I think they listened to him a lot. It sounded like John Eric Sullivan was someone he was really high on even before the process started. And John Eric Sullivan, obviously, he probably blew them all away when he met with them. And then for Halfley, if there's any doubt that he's just going to hire a friend type of deal, I think Halfley probably put that to he also just probably blew them away when he met with them. I thought Troy came off great. I think Troy might be paid for this job next year with some other teams. I could see him having a little off-season job here every year, make some side money on top of his paying gig with ESPN and he's got a beer company as well. I mean, Troy ain't hurting for money, but he's got a gig here, I think, because
he clearly likes to work.
Valuable. Yeah. For Miami.
Yeah. So, but then that begs a question. Like, if a guy was that valuable and you respect him that much, why don't you find a way to bring him in as a part of your organization?
I agree. Sign him up.
Why would he give up his why would he give up his TV gig, though?
Well, you don't have to anymore.
TV gig is lucrative.
You don't have to anymore, Juice. Look at Matt Ryan. Look at Tom Brady. Well, you don't have to
Matt
give
Ryan's
it up.
Gone. He had to give it up. Matt Ryan's gone.
Oh, did he give up TV?
Yeah. He's all done with CBS.
So as an owner,
Tom Brady's the one, though, where he's the owner.
As an owner, you can do it. Or do you have to win 7 Super Bowls and then you get to do different things?
Yeah, chance there. But yeah, I'm taking.
I mean, he's got 3, Troy. He's halfway there.
For making gazillion dollars, man, over having to be over the day to day operations of a football team, man. It's. I mean, I'm not lazy like that. I'm just retired like that.
Right. Well. He's still grinding, though. I mean, not quite the way that he is, but, you know, all that travel and who knows. Everybody's got to make their own personal decisions there. The only difference is in TV, you can be wrong every week.
Nobody cares.
One of the best broadcasters, right? You know, you can – Troy never settles down.
But I'm bummed. That's a great one. That is a great one, Sam.
You are the best. You are the best. So it was good. If you didn't get a chance to watch it, I think you should definitely check it out. All right. Real quick, I want to talk about your Super Bowl picks, and then we're going to roll into I tried to tell y'all, and we're still going to try and end this thing at a reasonable hour here. Super Bowl picks. Savak, we haven't heard enough from you. By the way, Savak, everybody told me last week that, you know, they rarely get to hear from you. And then when you came on to the, you know, you turned the mic on, you were like 10 times louder than everybody else.
Is that what he did to us, Big Sam?
Yeah. That's just like podcasts.
Is it louder now? What's up?
That's pretty fun. I didn't notice it.
Sounds normal to me.
Somebody tell me that they had to literally turn the sound all the way down when you came on there. It scared
he came
me.
In hot, huh, Big Sam?
Yeah.
Savak came in hot like that car behind
me. Oh, man. See?
Revving up. So I'm just giving everybody a fair warning. I'm letting Savak come in. You know, I know he gets excited when he has that opportunity. Super Bowl picks, the legendary Savak. Who you got?
Oh, man, I would really love – I want to say it's Seattle. I think they got it. I think they're a better-built team. They're more secure. And honestly, I just kind of like Sam Darnold, want to see him succeed.
Let's go. The Marlboro man's descended. Yeah, okay. Right. I like it. Brands better today.
Andrew Gary Dick Hammer.
Speaking of Dick Hammer, Andrew said last week your mic was blowing everybody else away, but it's much better today. So, all right. Savak, go. Stop yelling, Savak. Savak goes with Seattle. Mike, I still want to keep calling you Olivia.
That's all right. You can stick with it. I've been called worse. No. Go with it. Olivia.
Mike, don't let him get away with it. He gets mad when there's an extra T on his last
name. I hate that.
Don't let him get away with anything.
I respect that. I'm upset with myself as long as I've known Mike. but I'm trying to retrain the brain. So Michael,
OJ, I sent him today my address. I sent him my address because he didn't have it, and you know, for something he needed it for. And he was gonna type back, "You typed your name wrong."
Like, how about the audacity on me? Like, fucking guy can't even spell his own name right. And then I go look it up. I'm like, holy shit, it's actually Oliva. What is wrong with me? What is wrong with me that I've been calling him the wrong thing all this time, typing it wrong the entire time? But what's really wrong with me that I assumed that he was wrong and that I was right? And it's only his name that he's had, you know, his entire life. Anyway, Mike Oliva, who do you pick for the Super Bowl?
I like Seattle in the game. I also think they're going to cover the spread for those of you that are into that kind of thing. I think they are just a more well-rounded team. And I love this game because it's just misery for Jets fans. Sam Darnold on one side, who they picked and let go. And then the Patriots, who always beat their brains in year after year for 20 years. The Jets fans are just in utter misery right now. And I love it. But I think Seattle wins. I think they cover. I don't think it's going to be close, but I don't think it's going to be like 35-10 either. I think it's going to be a nice, healthy 14-point win for Seattle.
All right. Interesting. OJ McDuffie.
Man, I mean, look, I talked about Drake May, solid player, man. They've got a really good defense. I do like Mike Vrabel. But with all that being said, I hate the Patriots.
Yeah.
I hate the Patriots. I hate the Jets. I hate the Colts. I hate the Bills. And like Mike said, though, this Seattle team, they ran through the toughest division, I think, maybe in the history of football. They to beat the Rams. The Rams are the only team I thought that could score on this team. And they beat the Rams three times, right? Was it two or three times?
Three
times. The Rams were that team. That division itself was a monster. And for them to get through all that and then get to the Super Bowl and not win it, that would be crazy. I think that team is so stacked. Defensively, they're incredible. Offensively, they're so solid running the football, and Smith and Jigma. I mean, is that his name? How you say it?
Yeah.
I'm not touching it.
The best receiver in football right now. There was a debate the other day about whether it was, you know, all chasing all those guys and Puka and all. This guy is the best receiver in football, and people game plan. This is what made me so mad about the Dolphins. People game plan against this guy, and he still gets 10 to 12 grabs. You know, 160 yards and a one or two touchdowns a game. Who else on the opposite side of him that, you know, that you got a game plan against?
It ain't Cooper Kupp at that age.
That's the stuff I'm talking about right there.
Yeah, so and meanwhile, Hill and Waddle got a race for two seasons. 12th
man, they will travel. They got money. They're close. They, you know, they live right there. All they got to do is travel a little south. They're right at home, you know. So I got the Seahawks. So.
Yeah, I mean, everybody picked the Seahawks. I feel like the Seahawks are nice reference there, Sam. Nice reference. I think the Seahawks are the smart pick. And I think everything – I mean, I agree with everybody here. They are the better football team. I think we saw what the Patriots, all the backup quarterbacks and the court people who got fired – teams that fired their coaches. And, you know, I mean, they definitely had kind of the dominoes were set really well for them, but there's just, I don't know, man, there's something about the way that they're playing. There's something about the way Vrabel has got them just kind of believing in each other. And, you know, the guy comes from a system where he has watched non-Hall of Fame coaches game plan on how to take away, you know, what other teams do best. And I just feel like they're going to keep that game closer than people anticipate. And if they keep it close, they might just give themselves a chance to pull off an upset. That's what
I think. Who the hell are you picking, man? I don't want to hear all that.
You know what? Fuck it. I'll just go with the Patriots. I'll just pick the Patriots because just to be counterculture here. And I couldn't.
If they win, he's going to take this clip and say, "See, I picked the Patriots."
Right. Well, you put my hand in the fire.
I tried to tell y'all.
That's right. You got one for next week.
Where will be, and I tried to tell y'all, and I won't write it 17 minutes before show starts. So I'll tell you about that. I think that somehow, some way, Miami finds a way to cash in and win the Super Bowl. I like that, Sam. I like that. This could be the one. Halfley gets off. I mean, he's just going to skip the whole. They still won't have won a playoff game in 25 years, which is part of my try to tell y'all. But he's going to skip all that and just win the Super Bowl. I like it. All right, let's roll right into that. Juice, I guess you're going to kind of just warm us up on this, I tried to tell y'all.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to warm you up because I really, you know, I tried to tell y'all that, you know, I grew up listening to Richard Pryor, Red Fox, my uncles and aunties and cousins, and they cursed a lot, you know. And for me, I realized when I come on with y'all on Wednesday nights that I curse a lot. And so what I decided to do is tell y'all that, and you haven't even noticed, I counted them. I only cursed twice tonight. Two times. And they were little words. They weren't any of the big words. You know what I mean? So what I'm trying to tell y'all is that my upbringing was not the best. In that, you know, I was had some bad influences sneaking around listening to Richard Pryor records and things like that. But I hope this new regime rips the hell out of some of these players when they're not performing at their optimum level. I don't mind playing football and being cussed at when I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. You know, I've had it. Everybody, I've had it, you know, before I got to high school. My high school coach didn't cuss. Joe Paterno didn't cuss. We weren't allowed to cuss. But after that, I was introduced to the coaching realm where cussing was prevalent. That's a big word, like mayonnaise, Big Seth.
Yeah.
So I tried to tell y'all that I'm going to try to cuss less, but I don't mind some of these players getting their ass cussed out. I tried to tell you.
Very nice. Very nice. I was wondering where you were going with it. I thought you were changing your leaf. And I want to know who called you out on the cussing. Who?
I just know that sometimes, you know, it ain't for everybody. But, that's all I know.
Well, you know, there's other options. So, but fair enough.
Well, can I get one in, though? Shit.
There it is. All right. Savak.
Oh,
with your
yeah.
bad self. Crank up the mic, everybody. Let's go. Crank
I'm
up.
I'm not
the...
screaming out, am I?
No, you're not good.
No, I'm
screaming. See, and don't feel bad, Juice. Honestly, I would probably be cussing a whole lot more. I just don't get to talk that much. So let's imagine I'm coming back to you guys from the future. I tried to tell y'all because I had a couple different directions I could have went, but I decided to keep it kind of, you know, a little bit simple. I tried to tell y'all we are long overdue to change that damn logo. Okay. Now, look, I have admired Stephen Ross's knack for real estate, his panache and trying to do more with less. And while I can understand the urge to want to put your personal fingerprint on your work, what's the old adage? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Which is exactly what they tried to do when they updated the logo back in 2013 and presented us with this abomination that looks like the logo SeaWorld would use if they started their own airline. Now, I can imagine that meeting right now. Some hotshot marketer sold Mr. Ross on the dream, the vision. Look at the dolphin swimming strongly, about to take the leap, but never quite getting out of the water. And quite honestly, I don't think there's a better representation of the last decade or so of Miami Dolphins football than this logo right here. Okay? Because it's exactly what those teams have been like. Teeming with hope, but ultimately underwhelming and under-delivering. And as a fan, looking at the franchise today, as we stand on the precipice of what appears to be a brand new era of Dolphins football, I'm calling on the brain trust down there to get in Stephen Ross's ear and get him to give us a logo more appropriate for a storied franchise like ours, so that in a few years, when it's been changed and the team is kicking so much ass, you'll all probably go blind. We can look back and remember that I tried to tell you.
That was a good one.
That's a good one.
You can't get out of the water.
That's right.
It's an overweight whale that's struggling.
Right.
Juice, I counted like four mayonnaise words in there too.
No, I know.
How about the adage though? What about
those
the
right
old adage?
Just for you, Juice. Just for you.
That was great, man.
Four mayonnaise words to only one course word. I love it.
That's
I love
right.
it.
That's right.
Too good. Like a street smart carrot top. Too good.
Oh, my God.
Too good. Oh, man. Mike, I'm not even going to mess up. I'm not even going to try.
Abomination.
Here's what we
Mike
got.
Oliva, it's a... You are abomination. There it is.
Abomination. Okay, it's a Super Bowl this weekend. We all hate the Patriots. We all can agree. Screw the Patriots. And they're back in this game. But one thing I've heard over and over again, and I'm sick of hearing, is that the Patriots are lucky. Look, we're all fans of the Dolphins. We all like the Patriots. Let's just be honest, some real talk. They ain't lucky. They're smart. When they see a problem, they fix it. And the other thing they do right is they overinvest in the quarterback position. While Miami's been sitting around hoping, wishing, and praying Mike McDaniel would become a good head coach, the Patriots were firing Gerard Mayo after one season because they saw the handwriting on the wall real quick. They saw a problem. They fixed the problem. Look where they are this weekend. They're also smart enough to constantly invest in a quarterback until they got it right. While Miami gave Ryan Tannehill 7 years, Tua 6 years, and didn't have a legit second stringer the whole time for either one of them and didn't use any high-round picks to bring in any other quarterbacks to push them, the Patriots take the other approach. Tom Brady, when he was peak Tom Brady, look at this because I looked it up. When they had Tom Brady, they took Ryan Mallett in round 3 in 2011, Jimmy Garoppolo in round 2 in 2014, Jacoby Brissett in round 3 in 2016, Slops. And in 2019, Jared Stidham. And once Tom Brady left, they took Mac Jones. When that didn't work, they took May. And guess what? The year they took May in that same draft, they took Joe Milton in round 6 because they're like, one of these two are going to work out. We don't know. We don't care. So here's the deal. At once, May proved he's the guy. They took Milton, who they took in round 6, and they trade him for a pick around 5 the following year. That ain't lucky. That's smart. The NFL's a cold business, folks. But if you want to win, you follow the Patriots' way. And the Patriots' way is not Bill Belichick. The Patriots' way is not Tom Brady. The Patriot way is see a problem, fix a problem. Don't care about public perception. And also, keep drafting quarterbacks till you get it right. And once you get it right, you keep drafting more of them. That's the Patriots' way. So I tried to tell you all the Patriots ain't lucky. They're smart. And it pains me to say that. I hope they lose by 100 this weekend. But it ain't luck if they win.
I just wanted to point out real quick, fun fact, both those GMs, both the GMs in the Super Bowl, they both have some Green Bay Packer front office experience. And they both credit their time with Green Bay with their development.
Yeah. Dude, we should have just turned our damn mics down today.
Yeah.
Okay, Savak and Mike just bringing it. I love it. F it, Mike Olivia in quotes. I love it. I love it. Too good. Too good. Well, fellas, I tried to tell y'all that with great power comes great responsibility. Actually, that was Benjamin Franklin Parker, you know, otherwise known as Uncle Ben to those of us who were closest to him, you know, the guy from the Spider-Man comics. But that's neither here nor there. So, yes. With great power comes great responsibility, and as one of only 32 head coaches in the National Football League, as a man who now dons the same title as the Don himself, Jeff Hafley indeed has great, hell, spectacular responsibility placed upon him. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, gentlemen, but the Miami Dolphins have not won a playoff game since December 30th, 2000. Yes, the glorious memory of Lamar Smith rumbling 17 yards for a walk-off overtime touchdown, sending future Hall of Famers Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison, and Edgerrin James on that long walk of shame home, took place 25 years ago. A quarter century has passed since the Miami Dolphins accounting department has last cut a winning playoff check. LeBron James celebrated his 16th birthday as my partner in podcast crime was hurtling across the goal line himself, index finger waving in the air. Half of our roster ran into the locker room, Juice, to grab their Nokia cell phones to set up their post-game dates. And they were on MySpace, too, I think. Seahawks quarterback Sam Darnold was still shitting in his diapers. He was 3, but he's always been a late bloomer from what I understand. While Patriots quarterback Drake May wasn't even a glimmer in his father's eye. Hell, Mike Vrabel had just completed an 18-tackle season for the Pittsburgh Steelers, unaware of how his life was about to change. And guess what else? Dave Wannstedt looked like he picked up right where Jimmy Johnson left off. He had just delivered the first of back-to-back 11-5 seasons, and we all believed in him. 6 years later, however, that belief had long passed us by. The Wannstedt era was laughed at. Of course, little did we know, it would become looked upon as the glory days for so many of Dolphins fans that we hang out with today. The Dolphins would go on an epic run of head coaches that included a guy that was not going to be the Alabama head coach, a guy who failed forward fast, like really fast, a guy who loved field goals like I love Mountain Dew, a guy who made sure your shoes were tied and gum wrappers made their way into the garbage cans, and on it went. But something else happened 6 years after that glorious, blacked-out December afternoon. Good old Diamond Dave Wannstedt gave a young and hungry defensive backs coach from Albany a shot to be a GA for his Pitt Panthers. Young Jeff Hafley joined Wannstedt's staff, and in some strange and twisted way, Wannie handed him a torch with a really delayed flame so that his graduate assistant would one day take on the role that Dave once embodied. Know what I mean? And so here we are. The student has become the master. And I'm not saying Dave Wannstedt is the mustache version of Obi-Wan Kenobi, but heavy is the head that wears the crown, and Half has his hands full with power and responsibility. Responsibility to Steve Ross and to Sully, to Aikman and to Marino. Responsibility to the coaches and the players in that building, but also responsibility to you, the fans, to us, the podcasters, to the city of Miami, to the legacy of this once great franchise. It all rests on Half's shoulders now. And how sweet would it be if a Diamond Dave disciple broke the curse and brought us back to, well, hell, at the very least, the days of Wannstedt. This is what is facing Jeff Hafley right now. This is the standard that must be set, the expectations that we all have. The Miami Dolphins belong in the playoffs every year, and they need to start winning postseason games. With great power comes great responsibility, fellas. And Jeff Hafley better be ready for it. I tried to tell y'all. Ooh.
Let's go. The Dave Wannstedt days are returning. I love it. Well, you know what? We all laughed at those Wannstedt days. He won a lot of games in Miami. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
He did. Andrew, I'm hurt. I wrote that, damn it. Like 20 minutes ago before the show started.
He really did. He called. He was on the way.
Speeding through Weston to get here to the Casabella Design Group.
Diamond Dave Wannstedt, he called him. I love it.
I called him Diamond Dave.
Outstanding, y'all.
He's a good man. Boy,
so good, man.
He's a good man. Well, fellas, this was a lot of fun. Who knew that you could have this much fun in the offseason? But then again, the Miami Dolphins know how to keep everybody busy during the offseason. So.
They do. They win it every year.
Great stuff.
They win the offseason every year.
And if you've stuck with us this long, I also want to say there's going to be more announcements to come. But Juice and I have been in some really cool talks with Mike Oliva, not Mike Olivia. Mike Olivia is old news, Mike Oliva. We've been in some cool talks. There might be some cool partnerships between the Fish Tank and Dolphins Talk coming up this season. So stay tuned for more information on that. And I hope we see everybody a week from today. We'll do it again.
Yeah. I mean, we got some Super Bowl talk, right? We got to.
Yeah, I mean, let's just hope the Patriots don't win. I can't sit through another Patriots dynasty. I can't do it.
Patriots win is, I'm not going to be able to show up.
I can't do
y'all better show up because I got an I tried to tell y'all if they do.
Oh, I know you do.
Like you, you just told us how smart they are.
That's why nobody's going
to
show up.
They are smart, but I don't want them to win. I mean, they can be smart and lose.
I don't want them to win.
Yeah, but, no, if they win, I'm sitting out the entire next season. Yeah,
right. Like Thanos said, it's inevitable. So there it is. Dude, get us the hell out of here, man.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one, of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank, it's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank.